session number 27081, Reel 2.
So you're telling me about morale in the second Gulf War, what you were thinking?
I think a lot of the guys actually did look up in some degree, but a lot of the people who went out there first time didn't want to actually be known as when I was out there last time. It was hard to stay away from that because obviously a lot of people had a lot of questions on how things were out there and stuff like that, and it always come over when I was out there last time. But yeah, I think morale totally was... I wouldn't say people were being warmongers, but a lot of people were looking forward to going out there and doing their job, going out and doing what they were trained to do. Not wanting to be there, but they wanted to get over and done with, because they knew, right, you're going, let's just go and do it. Get there, let's get back.
So what vehicles were you working with this time?
I was with Challenger 2 then. I had a Krav Challenger Armoured Repair and Recovery Vehicle. That was a vehicle I was working from. It was 14 Challenger 2s, supporting various other pieces of equipment as well, like 432s, 434, Warrior 512s. I think that was a selection of B vehicles as well. But that was the main equipment I was supporting was Challenger 2.
And what did you like to work with?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, the crews I was with, very professional with the vehicles. Totally looked after them. It was good to see for a change, because there's some units out there don't actually look after the vehicles. They take them for granted, but these guys knew that the only way they can do their job is by using the vehicles. So that made our job easier. And overall, we didn't really have any major nightmares. We had them in the training side of life when we were training before we went out, but we didn't have them when we were out there. But obviously our normal failures, but that's just the way it goes, isn't it? Yeah.
So, how then did you actually win the MC?
I think it was it's through four occasions. We actually got the initial order to go to our forming up point. We knew we were going through then. We then moved up, once we crossed the border, moved up into holding position across the other side of the border, just established there, just to keep the crossing open. Then we then pushed north towards Basra then, and we moved up the highway. One of the lead call signs took missed a turning, so he turned round to come back to get a turning, and hit a mine. Straight away he let the rest of the squadron know that he'd hit a mine, so the rest of the squadron basically come to a stop, and he hadn't suffered any major damage to the vehicle apart from the fact that it had blown his track off of his vehicle. It struck him on his front right hand side. With that, the squadron commander, squadron leader, and the 2IC of the squadron took charge of getting the squadron out of there, so that basically myself and the Krav and the crew that was with me could extract this casualty and then get it back on the road so we could push on. So the squadron pushed on up to Basra, and we went to get this one that had blown its track off out of its position. At that stage, Cottle Mill, who was the electronics tech on the wagon, me and him were going to do the clearing of the mines up to the thing and get the crew to clear back so we could actually get a safe lane down to it. Luckily enough, at that stage, engineers tipped up. So we're like, look, we've got a mine strike here. They had a further task in up north and says, well, they couldn't help us at the time. They had to push on up to their tasking. So they gave us a bit of equipment like mine prodders and everything else like that. So we were like getting down, starting to do some prodding. And I think the bloke had a change of heart and realised that, well, maybe these guys actually do need a hand, and he stopped and gave us a hand. So we cleared a route to it, and then we extracted the casualty by winching it out after we'd extracted the crew through the safe lines. We then put the vehicle back on the road and repaired the damage to its track. And I think he went through the rest of the war with half a road wheel, because we didn't have any road wheels to change at the time and we didn't have the time to change it. And he just kept going with half his road wheel blown off. And he got through the whole of the actual war before he actually had to change it. So once we'd extracted him, we then followed him up to the outskirts of Basra, where the squadron had taken over from the Americans on Bridge 3 and Bridge 4, just outside Basra, to control the blockage of Basra so that we could then start the push forward and taking the Basra. At that stage, we were quite busy with work for all that time there. And the next call we got was one of the call signs had been told to push into Basra. Now, he was attached to one of the rifle companies, and he was on Bridge 4 at the time. I was situated at Bridge 3. So he then changed his frequency onto our net to say, look, he needs assistance, because he went to go across the bridge at Bridge 4, Sterling, I think the nickname was for it. And as he got to the top of the bridge, all his systems in his tank just cut out. He had no electrics, no nothing. He had no turret power, no vehicle power. So he was sat right on the top of this bridge, as I think it was five T-55s were advancing towards him. So basically he gave us a call. So we basically shot off to help him, just broadsided right along the side of the river from Bridge 3 to Bridge 2, Bridge 4. And quickly, we got out, connected up the tow bars and all that sort of thing, disconnected the drive to his engine and towed him out of location so that it was safe. At this stage, two of the supporting tanks had pushed forward to take these T-55s out. At that stage, we'd become a bit of a sitting target there. I mean, people said we were getting shot. I didn't hear it. We were just going about what we had to do as quick as we could do it and just get out of there. You know, I don't remember any shots being anywhere near me anyway. So we then extracted him back to a little building which had used as a makeshift camp. The squaddies at that bridge, just as a little base. And we pulled him there. We decided to find out what had gone wrong with him. So we got his decks up and all that sort of thing. At that stage, we started getting mortared, and like the mortars were landing like about 20 metres away from us and stuff like that. And there was one bloke who was in a 4-3-2 who was doing ammo bashing, and just at the back of his wagon, the mortar round landed right at the side of his wagon. So he was quite a lucky bloke that day. That was quite a funny thing. We thought we'd better get out of there at that stage, so we did. We just dropped the decks, we're going to sort out somewhere safer. You know, that was the second occasion. The third occasion was we went to do a surge op into Basra. It was over Bridge 3, it was there. I don't know if the surge op was for me to go and pull one of the statues of Saddam Hussein down to show an act of defiance and show that he was, you know, the message behind it, he's toppling. I don't know if it was purely set up for that, but they'd set up VCPs and that to show presence, vehicle checkpoints and all that sort of thing with the infantry. And it was quite funny, the squadron leader at that time. We'd just got into location, he called me in to do this. Just before he called me in, the foxhounds, basically the infantry that were there supporting us, were told to stay in their vehicles because we were getting mortared. Right at that stage, he says, right, 2-4 Charlie, which being my call sign, he says, right, you should go forward now and pull this statue down. And we were thinking to ourselves, hold on a minute, what's going on here? Well, they've got to stay inside, but we've got to get out. You know, I didn't quite get to grips with that one at that time, so I had to thank him for that one later on. But yeah, they had the TV cameras there and all that sort of thing. I think it was SSVC or something, and they watched us pull this statue down and film it and everything else like that. And as soon as we'd done that, we extracted out. As in my tank, we extracted out. The rest of them stayed there doing the VCP. So we went back to our location, which was just down from the bridge. And as we got back there, we got a call over the radio that one of the call signs was extracting had hit another mine. So we raced back down to it. At that stage, a lot of fireworks had started happening at that stage. There's some bunkers that had been engaged by some of our own call signs. They'd started cooking off some of the rounds that were in them and stuff like that. So there was a lot of fireworks going off. And at the same stage, I think there was some people were engaging with coax, as in machine gun, to some of the locations around the university and stuff like that. But we had to get this vehicle out. And it, we don't know if it actually hit an unexploded mortar round or if it hit a mine. But he was definitely off the track, and he was on a dirt track. So he'd lost his track through some form of explosion, either being a mortar round or a mine. So we had to extract him from there. With that, again, myself and Cottle Cairns, who was the vehicle commander at the time, and Lance Cottle Cunningham, one of the other members of the crew, we jumped out of the vehicle and found out what was wrong with him and basically pulled him out of the chains and extracted him from the location. It was getting quite hairy at that stage because it was getting quite dark, and they were concentrating themselves on us because, like, little fires we'd had lit, we'd made from engaging the bunkers were basically silhouetting us. So it was quite a funny situation to be in at the time. So we extracted him back to our location and repaired his track. He was back in the action about 2 hours later, 3 hours later. The last one was when we actually done to do the push into Basra. We'd set out one company in, and a load of supporting tanks went one way, we went the other across Bridge 3. We dropped back down, it was basically to the same location as where we were a couple of nights ago where that third incident had happened. And as we got there, lead call sign come up, there was a blockage across the track, and it was a berm that had been built, and he could see mines within this berm. So they obviously realised that that was a route that we could use, so they decided to block it for us. At that stage, he called up that he'd seen mines, so he was we held where we were. And right behind me, I was behind the last tank, behind me was the engineer, Ricky, officer. And I could hear straight away it come across the net, the mines, and then the squadron leader come across the radio net and basically says to the engineers, have you got anything that can deal with it? At this stage, I mean, I think all of us on our wagon, we could feel that it was going to come towards us because we knew we had no engineer support with us, and we're like, oh, here we go, you know. And it had us digging holes with the blade of the Krav and everyone else that prior to that. And I think the penny dropped with the squadron commander, and it also dropped with us as soon as it started coming out that there was mines ahead, that he was wanting us to clear it, and we knew it was going to come towards us. We took that on the chin quite well, I think. We were all like, yeah, all right, let's just go do it. Yeah, we just went forward of all the call signs. We got the lead vehicle to start putting some high-explosive rounds into the berm to just try and soften up a bit. And we just put the blade down and pushed right through it. Just cleared the route so that the rest of the call signs could advance into Basra. And that was basically it. That was the end of taking Basra, you know.
So what was it like doing field repairs out there?
It's quite good, actually. I wouldn't call them bodges. I would call them technical field repairs, if you want to call it that, yeah. Battlefield repairs. The spares system, I don't think, was as good as the first Gulf. The spares route. I don't know how they managed to do it the first time round. The second time round was a bit slower. I think we were a bit stretched as to what we were doing. So we did have to employ a few battlefield repairs as such. The one was to my Krav, the idler was starting to walk off and the nut had started rounding. So basically what we had to do there was we took the end cap off and basically welded bolts into the nut to stop it from walking off. And I think, well, we definitely had that on it for the rest of the war. So, you know, we'd done some good battlefield repairs while we're out there. Test people's knowledge as well, you know, get some thinking a bit instead of just lump changing. And I think all the rest of the guys in the first section done quite well with their adaptability of the situation. Yeah.
Did you have to send many back to the second line repairs?
Second line was quite funny. Whenever you wanted them, you couldn't get them. And when you didn't want them, they were there. It was quite funny. We obviously went through a few CAS reps, stuff like that when we were there. Challenger 2 being what they are. They're always going to, it's not a failing on the crew, it's just the nature of what they are. They're going to break, you know. Nothing's designed to live forever, you know. It's going to naturally break. But yeah, we did have quite a few second line tasks, but they come to us the process of reaming the field, they come to us, so we just pulled them back off the line, and they come to our aid in a safe location, you know.
So what was the lifestyle like generally out there?
That was very hard. Yeah, that was very, very harsh there. Living off the vehicles. I wouldn't say boredom ever come into it. There was always something to do. But the main the main problem with it was with the flies. The simple thing of having a brew in a thermos cup. Well, when you get your boil in the bag rations nowadays, you get a plastic bag on the outside of it. Now, to stop the flies from getting it so we didn't get diarrhea and vomiting, we used to have to stick the poly bag over the top of it, you know, so that the flies can get to it. When you wanted to take a drink, you had to slide it up so you could just get to your mouth and have a drink, and that was it. You had to be very good with your personal hygiene because the heat and the flies were just really... you catch something at the drop of a hat, you know. The heat was quite formidable as well. It was starting to get quite hot. But overall, I think the hardest thing would have been the flies. The hardest thing was the flies. And we didn't really get a lot of what we were told we were going to get, equipment-wise. I mean, I spent the whole of the war in the equipment I wear now, the normal green stuff. I didn't get any deserts till after the war had actually finished, about 2 weeks before I actually flew back, you know. No dramas, it was the exact same equipment, it was just a different colour, you know. But it would just would have been nice to have been given something for the climate I was working in. I think I got a couple of little scarf things, sweat rags, but that was about it equipment-wise.
Mm-hmm. So did you have the same injections or did what previously?
Well, we went through the voluntary process of doing the anthrax injections for the second time round. I don't think there was a, I think there was maybe two people in the squadron who didn't take the anthrax injections. We went the first Gulf War. I went through all the basically form a line. You're getting some injections here. All right then. This time round. We were obviously inoculated prior to us all going out there with everything like the old HEPA, all that sort of thing. You know, it was all given to us prior to us going. But the anthrax which started prior to going, and we got a. I can't remember. Have we got another one in the theatre? No, we got it just before we went to the theatre, and we got the booster, I think, in theatre. I can't remember, but we got all the injections we required for the anthrax, and as I said, I think there was only two people in the squadron who didn't actually take it, you know.
So were you stationed around Basra all the time, or did you move more?
Well, when we initially went up and took on Bridge 3 and 4, that was our location for the first, well that was basically, we just used to do a change in rotation with the other squadron. We'd pull back into Basra International Airport for not a bit of a downtime, but just to come off the line. Just a couple of hours off the line was a godsend, because inside your tank is just full of flies. It didn't matter where you went, it was full of flies. The only respite you had from the flies was at night time when it would cool down, and you'd look around inside your tank and they'd just be all sleeping around the edge. As soon as the sun came up, that's it, they're all back out again. It was an absolute nightmare, you know. Bridge 3 was worse for that. Bridge 3 was really bad for the flies because there were rubbish tips either side, so it was absolutely horrendous. We did go to Bridge 2, which was the towards the top of Basra, well, the northwestern edge of Basra. And then once we'd pushed into Basra, we pushed north of Basra to a power station, which we took over from the Queen's Green Guards. They initially moved in there and secured that. We then moved in there and used it as an operating base because Queen's Dragoon Guards went on to further tasks and stuff. And basically, we were just to look after that AOR and ensure that the northern end of Basra was protected from any further assaults and stuff like that. You know.
Did you meet any of the Americans, or did you come into any joint service with them at all?
We didn't actually. I was quite. The Americans' approach to taking on They were meant to go up and they were meant to secure the bridges, the bridge on the outside of Basra. They didn't. I think with that that news reporter, they got a shot out there. That was Bridge 3. Now, they were the ones that actually done that there. And when we tipped up there, we could see these vehicles and all that stuff that were lying there. But they were short of the bridge by about 400 or 500 metres. Now, we actually pushed it right up to the line there. And for that first night we were there, for Bridge 3, Bridge 4, it turned into a bit of a turkey shoot with the fact, because the Iraqis on the other side were just lined out in all their positions, all dug in. And it was just, they would really pop at us and we'd just engage them and take them all out. They just didn't even know what was hitting them half the time, because we could engage them up to, I think it was 3Ks. They couldn't even see us at 3Ks. You know, it was quite funny. But the Americans were just purely interested, I think, in the word go, as in hitting Baghdad and taking Baghdad. I think Basra to them was just part of the way of going up towards it. I don't think they actually done much towards ensuring their route to Basra was protected. We end up doing that up to Basra. But dealings with Americans, through the training and everything else, out on the ranges with them, everything else, we'd had the stages of working with them. Overall, we didn't have much to do with them. You know, we had some Americans attached to us, which were basically call the planes in and stuff like that. We never got them. We never got any helicopter support. We never got any airstrikes or anything like that. We very rarely got any fire missions from the artillery, because they were always directed by other people. You know, we were just sat there just taking out anything that came in over on the bridge line. You know, we kept in the 2K buffer zone of the bridges. You know.
What were your commanding officers like?
Cool. Yeah. I think it's got to be quite hard to be a commanding officer when you go to a war. You know, you've sometimes got to tell people to do things that normally could put their lives in danger, but that's part of the job. You know, I think the overall approach from all the guys that were in the squadron, because that's mainly what my outlook of being out there was purely concerned with being in the squadron. But the squadron leader was absolutely brilliant, Major Trant. Yeah. Very good person, very good commander. The 2IC, excellent. And all the troop commanders, very good as well. Very professional. As I say, with the build-up training and all that stuff we'd done, the fact of doing BATS prior to going out there, we'd all moved up to a very high level of readiness. And we all knew exactly what jobs we had to do, what was expected of us. They knew how far we could do, how far we could go with what we needed to do. And like every other thing the army dishes you, they always want that little bit more, and they knew they could get it. They knew they could get it because of the approach that each of the squaddies within the squadron done for it. Very, very, very professional squadron in everything they've done. Laid back but lethal was their motto, so that's what they've done. Yeah.
So were you, did you come back home straight away, or were you deployed out there for a little while
longer? No, we were quite lucky, because QRLs and the QDGs were going through what they call an arms plot. They were swapping camps. QDGs were moving from Katwijk to Osnabrück, and the Queen's Royal Lancers were moving from Osnabrück to Katwijk, taking over different each other's camps. Because that was going on, we got pulled out of the theatre. We weren't one of the first lot to get pulled out of the theatre. I actually was quite lucky, because I flew back the day of my birthday, so I was happy with that. But we didn't just bomb burst straight after it. We sat up in that pillar station for quite a while, carry on with patrolling, and we were quite lucky to be sat right beside this big ammo compound that the Iraqis had, miles and miles of it, and that was part of our task, look after all that.
So did you get any trouble from the Iraqis afterwards, or pretty peaceful?
There was always the hardliners out there. There were soldiers up to the second that we pushed through the breach and we moved into Basra. The second we done that, they took the uniforms off, put their AKs underneath their beds and come out in the streets waving and shouting, yeah, yeah, thanks for that, you know. But there was always the threat of them doing what they wanted to do, was loyal to Saddam Hussein, everyone else like that. The squadron didn't at any stage switch off. The lifestyle of the Arabs out there, they will they'll push you as far as they can and try some more. They didn't get anything from us. We weren't harsh people, but we made sure that they knew we were in town and that we were here to control things, you know. So we didn't really have that many dramas about it. You know, just some hard patrolling.
So what did you think when you got back and back to sort of normal life? Did you have any problem getting back into it or?
No. It was like the first time round and any other op tours that I had done. It was just so good to be back and to get into normality again. The fact of having a shower every day was like, wow, this is like a real treat, you know. Wearing clean clothes each day, real treat. Not actually sweating as soon as you're waking up in the morning to the second you go to bed at night. Not being surrounded by flies, you know. Flies at this present moment in time do not bother me at all. Anything buzzing around me, I just ignore it now, you know. Coming back home, obviously the wife and kids, all that sort of thing, brilliant, you know. A lot of people look forward to that, a lot of people enjoyed that thoroughly, you know. It was good the way the regiment done it by the time we got back as well, because they made a bit of a fuss of it, you know. Because it was only two squadrons from the regiment that actually deployed, because we had one on Op Fresco and everyone else like that was going at the time. So they made a big thing of it, and it was quite a nice thing to come home to what they call as a hero's welcome. I don't think anybody did feel like a hero, but they were just so glad to be home, you know.
So how did you feel when you heard that you'd won the MC?
It was quite... well, basically I had to be pinched, really. I couldn't believe it. I don't for one thing think that I'd done anything special out there, because I just done what I was asked to do and what I was expected of me, and that was all. It's quite hard, the fact the other three people that were on the vehicle with me didn't actually receive anything, you know, receive any mentions and all that else like that. But yeah, totally made up, totally impressed, totally happy, but at the same time, I'd like to see the justification of the other three people on the crew being awarded something for which, to all four of us that was on the crew, was just a funny thing to say, an everyday task, another task, and that's all it was, another job to do, you know.
So, what have you been doing since, just back to training and...?
Well, yeah, I got posted from Osnabrück. Because I was staying with the Queen's Dragoon Guards when the QRLs and QDGs up there, I was going to stay in Osnabrück. I then got told I'd picked up my third, my sergeant's post, and I was posted to 19 Regiment in Lark Hill, and I've been there since. We've just been training and looking forward to going out to Iraq next year. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not really looking forward to it, but that's just a terminology way of saying it, you know.
So far, have you got any special memories so far?
What, of my time out in Iraq? Or yeah. My time of the army?
Your time in the army.
My time in the army. I think adventure training was probably one of the best ones I've done. Adventure training, we went from North Yorkshire, where I was at 40 Regiment, we went to Bavaria for 10 days. That was brilliant. Tour of Northern Ireland when I was at 4-6 NI workshops. That was probably the best tour I've ever done. Going there, doing your trade, doing it in civilian clothes, they say it was covert recovery. It wasn't covert recovery, it was just you drove about in trucks and that, picking up vehicles here, picking up vehicles there with covert slide back vehicles. That was good, that was very busy, but good fun. You know, work hard, play hard, a lot of the time. Fun times in the army. There's quite a load. I think the whole thing of the army has been fun. You know, narrowing it down to one thing, I think it's quite hard. You know, you have to take it off with a smooth. There is a lot of bad times out there, but you have to push through them, and 90% of the time is better. It is good times, you know.